Welcome to Inspiring Stories for Bauer and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Hello, my name is Tim McMillan. Welcome to another episode of Inspiring Stories brought to you by Bauer and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. My guest in this episode has been recognised in this year's 2021 Western Australian of the Year Awards. He's also been recognised in the 40 Under 40 Awards and so many other things to get through in the next hour or so. He's a country boy initially, grew up in rural Western Australia, having been born in Derby, then a graduate of Murdoch University. He spent time cruising the open seas on those massive ocean cruise liners. He started his own business. He's been a Churchill Fellow, so many more. Lots to get through in the next hour, so let's say hello and welcome to Brodie McCulloch. Hello, Brodie. How are you?
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the most immediate and current thing, being recognised as part of the Western Australian of the Year Awards. You're in the business category, and we'll hear all about why through your space-cubed entrepreneurial efforts throughout the course of the next hour or so. But what's it like being recognised?
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I think, you know, you chip away at something for 10 years and start up a business and aim to have a big impact on people. And then, yeah, to be recognised in this category is amazing. And I think also what it really shows is that, you know, you can create a business that has an impact. And that's what it's really demonstrated for me, is that is widely recognised. And I think the other people in my category, all of them are having an impact through the businesses that they've created and created a business to really create a sustainable impact over time.
And yet, looking at the way you go about your business efforts, you could just about justify an entry in the community category as well, couldn't you?
No, you definitely could. And I think, you know, through the programs we run, we're supporting women to learn to code, a lot of the social enterprises and not-for-profits that use our spaces. There has been a significant social impact through what Space Cube's been able to achieve.
Yep.
Social and environmental through the entrepreneurs we support. But I think having that business lens on it is really different, because it does frame that you can have an impact as well as create a sustainable business.
Yeah. Great too to be in your space in a state like Western Australia, which business-wise anyway has such a rich heritage around the resources industry. You only have to look at the skyline. So, you know, the tallest buildings all have the names of the big miners or banks, you know, emblazoned across the front there. Nice in the business category, where we're talking about the outstanding West Australians of the year, someone that's in a relatively new space like your own.
Yeah, I think, you know, mining and energy has really created a great platform for Western Australia, and we're seeing that right now through COVID, which iron ore price being over $200 a tonne is, I don't think anyone would have expected that 18 months ago.
It's handy at the moment, isn't it?
It's very handy. So I think that's a great platform for Western Australia to really look at how it does diversify its income, because having one big market and one big product is a bit of a risk, where, you know, if you're managing your own personal portfolio, then you wouldn't just have one big customer and, you know, one income source. So I think that's the opportunity, and what I've been focusing on for 10 years is how do we support those entrepreneurs who are having a big impact, growing a business in a whole range of other areas outside of mining and energy, and also inside mining and energy. There's lots of innovation that's happening in that space. And Western Australia is a world leader in a lot of that. We just probably don't talk about it anymore.
No,
as
exactly.
Much as we should.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about it now then. Yeah. So what does Space Cubed actually do, and how did you come up with the idea for it all those years ago?
Yeah, so I moved back to Perth in 2010, so the tail end of the last mining boom that we were having.
Yeah.
So moved back from the US. I'd been working for a cruise line as marketing manager, and great gig. Got to travel all over the world and see what was happening everywhere for about 4 years. And then moved back and was thinking about, well, what do I do now? I had some little bit of cash, which I'd saved over that period, and had seen a lot of these sort of innovation hubs, social enterprise, and entrepreneurial activity happening in the US and UK. And then moved back to Perth, and peak of the mining boom meant that there was a lot of focus on digging up iron ore and shipping it overseas. But there was a big gap in how entrepreneurs were being supported. So I was looking at setting up a social enterprise bike share business in Fremantle, and realised through that process that there just wasn't a huge amount of support. If you had an idea and wanted to drive that idea and get support and tap into a community who could support you. So that's really where Space Cube came from.
So, I mean, taking ideas, for those who are struggling to visualise what you're talking about here? Are you talking about these little, you know, the sorts of hubs you see, that, you know, the cutting edge work environments you see, you know, at Google headquarters or in parts of Silicon Valley? Is that the sort of idea you're talking about? Just a nurturing environment for all these little businesses to sort of come together and, I suppose, share their experiences?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. So we've built, currently there's 7 spaces across Western Australia.
Yeah.
Some of them we run, some we support to run. So on St George's Terrace, we have a range of different spaces, and people pay membership fees to access the space. So it really lowers the barrier for people to start up their ideas. So people could come in for as little as $30 a month, start up their idea. They can come on to a lot of events, access a whole community of people who are driving their ideas as well. Then we've got investment programs, so they can go into a range of programs to start up their ideas, including Plus8, which is an accelerator program where we invest about $50,000 per business into sort of 6 to 10 businesses per year, then give them intensive support, mentoring, and the space. We have a whole range of programs like She Codes, which is a women learning to code program, and then regional programs. And I guess the great thing about SpaceCubed is it provides a platform for other people to run their events. And programs that support entrepreneurs. So we're really just an enabler and a facilitator of that entrepreneurial thinking and upskilling. And it's just grown over the last 10 years, where we started with one 500 square metre space at 45 St George's Terrace. It was the old Reserve Bank. The space hadn't actually been used in, I think it was 15 years. So it was actually one of the last pieces of space available during the mining boom in Perth. And it just grew from there. So now we've got about 8,000 square metres of space across WA and are growing interstate now. So 2 staff in South Australia, 2 staff in Queensland, and a lot of opportunities in Sydney and Melbourne. But really designed to lower that barrier for people starting up and then supporting them through the growth of their ideas.
You must have seen some fascinating people come through those spaces in the years. Any that people would know about now who have gone on to become something well-known and recognised?
Yeah, so we've had, and I think it's probably taken 9 years for us to get to that point where we had a number of entrepreneurs come into the space 9-10 years ago who now have built really substantial businesses. So we supported through one of the spaces in Leederville, Health Engine. Mm-hmm. So Marcus Tan and the team have grown their business to be significant across Australia now and are managing bookings on a number of the vaccine rollouts programs. We've had Lawrence from Virtual Gaming World, which he started, it was just him, came into the space for one of our breakfast events, then met his co-founders, set up his team there. So there's sort of 3 or 4 of them. And now they hire about 400 people in Perth. And I saw he has just hit number 33 on the Australian Rich List. So it's
I hope he remembers where he started then. Right.
And this is the great thing is now what we're seeing is the companies that are sort of getting to that peak, finding some liquidity, their staff have all got a lot of skills, and then are reinvesting back at the beginning again. So VGW now supports She Codes, the Women Learning to Code program, because they need more developers. So I think we're now at that point where we've got that full cycle of people coming in, growing their business, and then reinvesting back into that community of entrepreneurs.
It can be a brutal environment, though, can't it, the startup business world? Equally, you must have seen some good people and maybe some good ideas as well come and go as well. As someone who's kind of facilitating that space and seeing them, you know, burst in with all these ideas and enthusiasm, is it hard to watch those just come to nothing as well?
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think all experience is good learning experience, and that's the attitude you've got to come into it when you're starting a business. The good news now is we just don't have as many people spending $100,000 getting a mortgage on their house to test out an idea. They can really start up for a small amount of money, test their idea, test with customers, and get that support network around them and programs to make that happen. Mm. So we're seeing less and less sort of people betting the house on their idea, which is good.
Yeah.
But then they can access that network to support them and really validate that they have something. Ideas are, you know, a million, you can have a million ideas, but it's execution that really matters.
And I hope you've personally picked a few winners in there very along the way.
Yeah, I've missed a few. But I remember we had the first Bitcoin meetup in our space about 8 years ago. And I remember the guy say at the time, I'm getting a $20,000 loan to buy Bitcoin. I was like, ooh, that's a little bit crazy. But it turns out he doesn't need to work out again. So
I don't even want to hear it. He's one of those people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, crypto, Who knew, eh?
I didn't, and it was happening right in our space. So.
Yeah, anyway. After the break, we're going to go right back to the start. You were, as I mentioned, you were born in Derby. You spent a lot of your younger years growing up in rural WA, but I'm keen to know where this sense of entrepreneurship came from in you. You know, your mum or dad, or where you picked it up along the way. This is Inspiring Stories. Brodie McCulloch is our special guest. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. Our guest in this episode is a candidate in this year's Western Australian of the Year Awards in Brodie McCulloch. Brodie, I mentioned that you're a country boy initially, growing up in rural WA. You started your life up in Derby. How did that come about, Derby of all places?
Yeah, so mum and dad were public servants. So dad, social worker, and was sort of doing his stint throughout country WA, and mum was a nurse. And yeah, they were in Derby. My brother was born in Kalgoorlie and then sort of grew up in Port Hedland. But yeah, we got a lot of great experiences. You know, went to, I'm actually now doing a lot of work in regional WA, so it's good to be back in Newman and Port Hedland more frequently, and being able to support those sort of communities to how they can support their entrepreneurs.
Yeah, they're both very nurturing occupations, aren't they? Nurse and social worker.
They are.
Do you think, is that where, I suppose, even though you've gone into the business world, there is a sense of nurturing to what you do too? Do you trace that back to your upbringing with your mum and dad at all, or am I reaching too far here?
No, I think so. I think that sense of civic service and social service, I think, is something that I've been able to bring in and just use a business to help deliver that rather than doing that through the public sector. So yeah, I think that's definitely the case. And also potentially, you know, I've had quite entrepreneurial relatives in the past, so grandparents. So I think it might have potentially skipped a generation. I'm entrepreneurial. My brother works in finance in Hong Kong. So
yeah,
we've definitely focused on the business side of things as a way to create change.
Yeah. As an upbringing though, I mean, they're two fairly, they're vocation jobs, really, aren't they? You know, you don't do it for the money. You don't do it for the kudos. They are the unsung community heroes, aren't they? Social workers and nurses, particularly. The environment that you grew up in, was it? Was it tough at all? Was it easy? Was it comfortable? Was it hard?
It was a comfortable environment. Very supportive parents. Across, as we grew up, you know, we had lots of access to sport and travelled all over the world. My brother was pretty good at BMX, so we got to do a lot
BMX.
Of travel through that. Yeah,
so yeah, right.
He was participating in world titles. I was not as good, but I got to go along for the trips. So, definitely my parents provided a really great environment for us growing up. And I think we're very supportive. I mean, I did very badly at school. Tried really hard, but just wasn't good at it. I learned through doing.
Yeah.
Whereas our school system doesn't really facilitate that.
Yeah.
I don't know how many tutors they had for me and trying to support me to make sure that I could get into university and follow that path.
Yeah.
But through that process, they gave me this platform now that I've been able to do what I can do and supported me through that.
Which bears no reflection on your education experience at CBC Fremantle.
No.
When you went there, was that sort of your first, had you been in the city for long then, or was it a move from the country to attend a school in Perth?
We moved about when I was 12 years old, so
yeah.
I moved to Perth and then, started at CBC. And
how did you find that move from, you know, a pretty quiet rural destination like Derby or Port Hedland, you know, arriving in Perth as a 12-year-old, was it a lot to take on?
Yeah, it's. I think I'm pretty social, so managed to make friends reasonably quickly. But I think any move like that is a tough one, especially from a Port Hedland, which wasn't even the city that it is today. You know, now it's there's a lot happening across the Pilbara and Kimberley with mining. So through that shift, and you know, up to that point, I'd been doing okay at school. But then, when getting to Perth, it was challenging, challenging school environment just from the point of view of. Yeah, the way I was learning in country WA, you have a bit more freedom. And also, younger years at school, you have a lot more freedom to learn. Whereas once you start getting into that, needing to do TE and or ATAR, it's called now, and going into that structured system, but it changes pretty quickly. And if you're not geared to learn that way, it can make it very difficult.
Yeah, and I know that as a young man, you also enlisted in the Army Reserve too. I mean, where did that motivation come from?
Yeah, so after school, I managed to get into Murdoch University through a program there. And while I was at university after the first year, I was sort of like, what am I doing? Didn't really know what I wanted to do.
Yeah. What were you enrolled in?
I was enrolled in marketing and e-business, so a commerce degree. And a year in, you know, your first year of university is really sort of 101.
Yeah, it's a write-off academically, isn't
it? That's right. So, you know, after doing accounting and these subjects, I was like, I don't know if this is what I want to be doing. To my parents, I don't think I told them that I was doing that, but enlisted in the, went into the Army Reserve, but...
It's a hell of a gap year to pursue, isn't it? Yeah, it's a different sort of gap year. Most people, you know, nick off to Europe and backpack around for a year or so to get out of their system.
That's right.
You went into the Army Reserve.
I did, yeah. So, and did a year basically full-time. So, took that gap from university, did a year and got all my qualifications and everything. So I joined the artillery. So I was a gunner in the Army learned a lot. Went back to university and aced university.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where the Army teaches you how to just keep pushing through even when things are really, really hard.
Yeah.
And knowing that those things will come to an end. So I learned a lot, made lots of good friends, learned a lot through that, and then, went back to university and got, in those final years, got my best grades, where usually I was sort of a pass type of grade, whereas I managed to, I was getting up HDs, because also a bit of a shift, I was doing e-commerce courses, those sort of things at uni, and things that you're really I was really interested in.
Yeah.
So, through that process, just learned a lot and got to meet lots of different people through the Army and then apply that learning, which is very transferable to my university degree.
So it really was a pivotal time in your life then, as you reflect on it now.
Definitely, yeah. I think, and you do see a lot of people who are from the military go in to start up their own businesses and set up their entrepreneurial endeavours based on their ideas, because I think it does build in that sort of resilience and grit that otherwise, you just don't get in life. Interestingly, in Israel, everyone has to go national service, so everyone goes through a stint in the Army, and it's actually linked to why they think there's a lot more entrepreneurial activity.
Is that right?
In Israel, because everyone's sort of put on a level playing field.
Yeah.
No matter what part of society you're from, you need to go through that common experience.
So, yeah.
So yeah, I think for me it was a similar sort of thing. I got to learn a lot about people I would never meet or come across what they're doing, and then really, learn from that, learn how to work with a whole range of people, and then that served me really well over the last 20 years.
How did it serve you then when you got into the cruise line industry?
Interestingly, it was one of the things that helped get me hired, because cruise lines, like often the captains of these cruise ships, they're ex-Navy in some way, so there is that military sort of hierarchy on board cruise ships, because if there's an emergency, things need to happen pretty quickly. I was a marketing manager, so didn't have to worry about that side of things, but was more focused on making sure the ships made money and had a good experience for customers on board. But it was great. I was looking at two things. One was to go and travel, and one was a way to do that was either go with the Army and do some peacekeeping in the Solomon Islands, or I'd got a job working for the cruise industry of the US. So I chose the cruise industry
Sounds like a wise choice.
And got to travel, all over the world. So Mediterranean, Caribbean, Alaska. Have a
Sounds
lot of great
amazing.
Experiences.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
And having a good time and making sure everyone else had a good time.
That was it. And also the experience through the Army helped me for that, because I was in charge of about 80 people from, I think it was about 60 different nationalities on board the ship. So all the people working in shops and casino, anything that sort of was income generating on the ships. And just working with that diversity, there was actually quite a few Australians in my job, because Australians sort of get along with everyone and just work together to make things work. So it's actually, it helped me understand a whole range of cultures and then what could drive those cultures.
You must have seen some things out on the open sea.
It was, It was an experience, that's for
Come
sure.
Come on, Brody. Any stories you can share that stand out?
Some of the, especially on like the Atlantic crossings, just some of the it's amazing what people do when, you know, the weather turns south and you're out, 8 days to cross the Atlantic, and just if you hit rough weather, then you see how people really behave.
Yeah.
Because, it's just people generally aren't that calm under pressure. And you can see that firsthand, especially it was from both crew and guests. And, and just seeing how that hierarchy, for people to be able to fall back on, there's a process, there's a system, and we know how it all works, just gives people that comfort that, that you could get through it. And you always did. It was they were big ships. It was about 5,000 people on board. So
the real monsters.
They're huge. Yeah. So generally, like rough weather still impacts them. But it's but less so than a much smaller ship.
I've never been on a cruise ship. No. Well, the way things are at the moment, I'm not sure I ever will. But they seem like places of just absolute decadence and indulgence. You know, it's just it's as much as you want at the buffet. There's, you know, multiple swimming pools to choose from. People just, you know, living their best life, to borrow one of those annoying phrases.
Yeah, and I think in the US, actually, like, cruising has started again already. Yeah. So even off the back of everything that happened during COVID, and it's generally driven by the fact that Americans only have 2 weeks of holiday a year, and no matter what, they're taking those 2 weeks
of holidays. They're going to cram a lot of good times into those 2 weeks.
And a cruise ship for 7 days of that is a good way to see a whole bunch of places, get some sun, and then have a really good experience that for a pretty reasonable price as well. Compared to, you know, tacking on travel time.
Was it as much fun for you, or was it work?
It's everyone on board cruise ships work really hard. It is it's 7 days a week, so you're working 7 days. You have, you know, some time off, but the crew, especially a lot of Indonesian and Filipino crew, are working extremely hard. And you saw that through, you know, I was on board during the global financial crisis, where the cruise industry still kept growing through that period. But one of the interesting things was we only had pretty much Australians and Russians on board, because they were the only ones in the world left with money during the GFC. Right. And interestingly, a lot of the crew were paid based on comment cards. So you know, how the guests sort of part of their pay was made up of that. And Australians, everything's just good, not excellent.
Yeah.
Whereas Americans, everything's excellent.
Yeah.
And Russians just didn't fill them in. So we had a real challenge where, you know, crews pay packets where some of the crew are on for 11 months at a time, sending their money home to their families. And they had a hit during the GFC of their pay. So managing that sort of tension on board the ship, and as a manager, needed to make sure that, it was really, you know, people were away from their families. So making sure that they had that support while they were there.
When you come into dock, though, you must have had some downtime to go and explore the parts of the world that you happen to be in at the time. Do you get that freedom?
Yeah, no, you have that freedom, and you do. I got to have some great experiences, so especially in Alaska. I recommend anyone go to Alaska, because a lot of the glaciers are melting, so there's probably a limited amount of time to see that sort of stuff. There's, some great experiences to be had out there in the world. And cruising, you know, if you're in Europe, you can stop at 18 places in 20 days, which you just can't do any other way of traveling, and don't only have to unpack once as well. So really good. But it's it was a good time in my life. Got to see a lot, experience a lot, learn a lot.
Yeah,
and then moved back to Perth.
And good timing, because who knows when we'll be able to do all these things again? Despite people in the States, by the sounds of it, already having a go at it. We need to take a break, Brody. This is Inspiring Stories. Brody McCulloch is our special guest. We'll be back with more right after this.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. We are hearing the story of Brody McCulloch. Brody, you've just spent close to 5 years floating around the world on this luxury cruise liner. What was it that made you think, I'm done, I need to put my feet back on firm earth and get life starting in a whole new phase in Perth?
Yeah, it had been, 4.5, 5 years, and was looking at sort of, I think I was about 26 at the time, so still early enough, but
still on your prime.
So I think as long as before you're 30, you've sort of worked out what you want to do in life, it's okay. But, you know, had a lot of good experiences, but also at the same time, really hard, you know, when you're traveling all over the world, you know, very transient population working for cruise lines. So longer term relationships and friends, it's a tough gig.
Yeah.
So really looked at, moving back to Perth and sort of spent a few weeks working out, right, what should I do now? Because that was a great period of my life. I'd saved a little bit of money and just saw a huge opportunity in WA where there just wasn't this support for entrepreneurs. And you know, it's one of those things where you see all this big change happening in the world around our environment, society, the wealth that's been created, and the fact that we didn't have a good system for supporting people who are going to take on those big challenges was what I saw as an opportunity.
Yeah. In 2013, you received a Churchill Fellowship, which is an incredible fellowship to get. But I think a lot of people here don't even know about the Churchill Fellowship. Tell us firstly, what is the program and what did you get from it?
Yeah, so the Churchill Fellowship, people can apply from, as long as you're Australian, that's the one prerequisite that you can apply for it. And it's really to go and they'll fund you to go around the world to look at who's doing it differently in your space? What's the experience we can learn from others in whatever you're doing and what you want to create in Australia? And then apply that back and share that back with Australia. So it's they usually have about 100, 110 people a year from around Australia that go on them. So it's quite wide, usually about 10 or 15 people from Western Australia. And I don't think it's well known. Anyone can apply for this. If you're doing something or being a bit more ambitious or something that can have a big impact on Australia, then it's definitely worth applying and they'll fund your trip overseas. I went to the US, Canada, the UK, Hong Kong and Singapore through my trip to look at innovative models to scale social impact and got to learn. I think that thinking put me forward 10 years of where I was at the time.
Yeah.
And then I wrote a report about that and have shared that. And I went back through that report recently and all the lessons learned there have held up well. And that set me, I don't know if Spacecube would be where it is today if I hadn't gone through that process. So definitely encourage anyone. They do yearly intakes and process for it. But it is a great award and also a great way to see the world and really further your thinking in whatever it is that you're passionate about.
And you don't have to worry about anyone else having a good time.
That's true.
But so what are you actually going to observe? You talk about, you know, these sort of new cutting edge sort of work environments and stuff. What are you actually going to observe? Are you going to see places like Google or these little, you know, tech hubs and stuff dotted around the world? Are these the places that you're going to look at and learn from?
Yeah, so through that process, I went and spoke with people. The whole sort of, it's called an ecosystem of support for entrepreneurs and innovators. So funders, co-working spaces and spaces for them to start up. The startups themselves in these areas, so in New York, in San Francisco, in Toronto, and how they were being supported. Really understanding what are the nuts and bolts that make an ecosystem, startup and innovation ecosystem work. And then I could apply that to, well, what's missing here? And how can we put that in place? So essentially then spent the next 8 years actually applying everything that I'd learned through that Churchill Fellowship.
There seems to be a suggestion come up every couple of years. You can almost bet your life on it coming up, you know, regularly. The idea of Perth becoming like a Silicon Valley, like a hub, does it frustrate you when this headline just recycles and then just disappears? I mean, is it happening? Is it realistic? Why hasn't it happened yet? Why do we keep seeing this headline sort of come and go? Is anything happening that might put us on the map in that sort of way?
Yeah, I think we're actually already on the map. It's just we don't talk about the fact that we're on the map. A lot went into Silicon Valley becoming Silicon Valley. There was huge amounts of defense and government investment. There was a silicon industry. So there was a number of precursors to how Silicon Valley has become the place that it's become. The proximity of capital against companies so that they could, you know, literally be in the same suburb and meet each other. So a range of different factors that have gone into creating that as a centre of the world from a technology investment perspective. Perth has a lot of the similar things. It's got large infrastructure projects, so the square kilometre array, where more data will be created in one day than's ever been created. So some of these stats that, you know, sort of boggle the mind.
Kind of make your head hurt a bit.
They do. Yeah. And I think we haven't even realised what the big opportunities are around that sort of technology being built yet.
So you mentioned one there, but what is going to drive that development here into us being like a pseudo-Silicon Valley? Is it the mining tech? Is it more defence tech here or defence industry here? What is it that's going to propel it?
Yeah, so I think the mining tech is already happening.
Yeah.
It just doesn't get talked about as much. Defence is definitely a big opportunity that's coming up. Increasingly also space, as in outer space. Mm-hmm. There's a number of companies that are setting up test facilities, remote operation centres for space and Earth happening in WA. But interestingly, a lot of the companies that have emerged over the last 10 years, whether it's Health Engine, so health technology, Canva, which sort of the founders are from Perth, they live in Sydney now and have grown their business there. So that's a $20 billion business.
She's done fairly well for herself.
They've done very well. And I think that's I do wonder now if, 10 years later, if they'd started now, would they be able to stay in Perth? And
yeah.
I think we're seeing more and more companies that are opting to stay here. So there is a number of those companies don't have a specific sector or anything. So our philosophy is around support everyone.
Yeah.
And whoever gets up, give them more and more support as they grow.
Yeah.
And that could be through funding, it could be through mentoring, whatever it might be, because I can't pick what idea is going to work. So we need to create an environment where the best ideas have the best opportunity to work.
So what's an average day look like for you?
Yeah.
You actually do, because you kind of you're almost the custodian of all these people and their ideas and their dreams, their ambitions, their business plans. I don't know. I'm trying to sort of describe you in a way. You're not the landlord. You're a mentor. You're so many different things to these people. What does an average day look like for you?
Yeah, so I've worked out where I can provide the most value is about how do we create that, make sure that ecosystem is really well supported so that if someone does have an idea, they can then clearly see what the pathway is to growing that idea and getting the support they need. So my day really involves, I don't have a desk. Actually, I've set up a monitor recently, so I'm trying to sit in one spot. But usually it's moving between the spaces. We've got a 26-person team across the different businesses now. So we have a number of different organisations that we use. So Cora is our mining and energy hub, plus eight's our investment program. So different types of brands for different types of programs or spaces. My role really is around supporting that team to deliver the best they can to our members and our partners.
And if someone comes into you and says, Brody, I've got this idea, I'd like to take up some space in one of your properties, do you just say, well, come on in? I mean, do they have to sort of show you that they've got a valid idea? I suppose what I'm trying to get a gauge on, is this like a Shark Tank type experience where they come in and pitch something to you and you go, I don't think that's going to work. There's no point continuing the conversation.
No, definitely don't do that because I did that initially and then people have gone on to be very successful. So
I'll prove you wrong.
Yeah, which is, a really valid thing to do. So,
so
again, that philosophy of it's a low barrier to entry from a cost perspective. People can come into lots of free meetup events every second Wednesday. There's Morning Startup where you can hear from a successful founder and then do some networking. Mm-hmm. We just had Startup Weekend, which is an event you have about 100 people come along on a Friday night, pitch their ideas, form teams around the ideas they want to work on, and then build the product by the Sunday and pitch that to potential investors. So really rapid prototyping of ideas. So I don't try and preempt what idea is and isn't going to work. It's about create the best environment where the best ideas will work. And if they can make it work, then we're here to support them.
Exactly. And yay for them. We need to take another break. After that, I want to ask you about your candidacy in the recent Lord Mayor. What prompted you? What on earth prompted you, Brody, to put your hand up for that? So I'm keen to get your thoughts on that. Right after we take a break, Brody McCulloch is our special guest. Back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. Tim McMillan is my name. My special guest is Brody McCulloch. And Brody, for those who perhaps aren't aware of your work with Space Cube but thinking, gee, that name sounds familiar. Where have I heard that name before? Particularly if they were a resident fairly recently in the city of Perth or a ratepayer in there thinking, oh, yeah, I do know that name. He ran for the role of Lord Mayor. in the most recent Lord Mayor election. What on earth compelled you to do that?
Yes, they definitely would have seen me hassling them at local cafes and running around the city. I'd been 9 years since I'd set up Space Cube and learned a lot through that process, and just saw the city hadn't had a council for 3 years. I was sort of a fresh, clean slate opportunity, and thought that, you know, how are we going to differentiate Perth? And that could be a good role to take what I'd learned and then apply that into that role around innovation, creativity, and attracting that best talent from around the world. Mm. So running on a few key messages about Perth is really, we've already got a great place to live. We all know that, but we don't really tell the rest of the world about that.
Yeah.
So at attracting the best talent from around the world, right now the visas are changing to attract talent from around the world. So all the pieces were sort of there. They just hadn't been put together and communicated well. So I thought that role could really do that.
How did you find it? Because, I mean, I take my hat off to anyone who has a crack at politics, although I say I take my hat off, I think some people are mad as well, you know, for wanting to do it in the first place. But, of course, we do need good people in these roles. How did you find the process of it and being on the campaign trail? And it must be exhausting.
It was an experience, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And I think this campaign specifically, because there was so much media attention around it.
Yeah.
There were 7 candidates for mayor. We ended up doing like 7 or 8 panel discussions in front of different industry groups or the community as well. So I don't think that doesn't even happen in state elections. You don't have that level of interest and scrutiny.
It's almost the closest thing we have to a US presidential style election, really, isn't it?
It did feel that way. and it was a really positive experience. I got to meet a lot of people around Perth who I hadn't met before, ratepayers and then also the business community. So I think through that process got to really understand what Perth was about and what the opportunities were for Perth. Really interesting process. I think that ongoing sort of it was an intense sort of 3 or 4 months, the schedule for it, where, you know, you're going from door knocking to calling people to doing a panel discussion to doing some media and jumping in between that the whole day, which, you know, hats off these sort of roles. It's that's what it's like 24/7. Mm. So I have a newfound appreciation for politicians. But at the same time, it was, just great to meet the community and understand what they were about.
I suppose your background and your message was, I don't know, probably a little more niche than some of the other candidates who went in hard on things like law and order and clean up the streets and all that sort of stuff. I suppose broader messages, things that were probably easier for people to absorb as part of campaign material. Do you regret sort of not going harder on that stuff and coming at it more from your natural position of being, well, I'm in the business space, the tech space, this is what I do, this is what I want to focus on?
Yeah, I think there's probably a few things that I would have, to win, would have needed to do that probably wouldn't have aligned with my values and what I'm about. And probably would have, like, I'm going to be in Perth for a long time, wouldn't have told the story that I want to tell about Perth. So that was a challenge because we sort of knew that, but at the same time, you know, really focused on the business community and also on the resident groups that we were engaging with. But our message was really about leading change. And interestingly, on reflection after the campaign, which you don't know at the time, with all the change that was happening in the world through COVID, people really didn't want anything to change.
Positivity.
Yeah.
Go away.
People really wanted everything to just stay how it was. And I think it's a reflection through, you know, the border closures have meant that mindset has really taken place across everyone. I mean, even myself, I'm super happy with the situation West Australia is in where we haven't had I know a number of people in Melbourne and Sydney who, businesses, like, it's a bit of a disaster. And globally, whereas we've managed to get through this without that sort of stuff. So I think that messaging probably for the time was leading change was the wrong message. But I don't know if I would do it differently now because it's the message that, you know, that if we could get enough people would inspire them. I think the bigger challenge was that, you know, there was 7 candidates and our system of first past the post meant that there was only, 6,500 votes to go across those 7 candidates.
Yeah,
and the person with the most wins.
Absolutely. Would you do it again?
Not right away. I think the next few years is really focusing on the business and growing the business. And I've sort of realised that, you know, I built this platform over 10 years and this is where I can have the biggest impact in the medium term. I think I wouldn't rule it out in the future. There's, and maybe not, maybe it's not just that position. There's other roles. I think the next sort of 8 years though in Western Australia, after the previous, after the Labor government just won, I think there's a bit of a challenge around that where, you know, what's the entry point, especially since I don't have a political background. I've been focusing on growing the business and having an impact that way. So never say never to these sort of things, but I think for the next sort of 5 to 8 years, yeah, it's really focused
on... You dipped your toe in the water and that's enough for now.
I learned a lot. I learned a lot through it and it was positive. But yeah, I focus on growing the business and having my impact that way.
I'm guessing part of your role and what you do bring to your business is a figure to inspire people, you know, and to help them, but to inspire and mentor them as well. Who are the people that have inspired you over the years?
So definitely mum and dad, through the work that they've done. They've, you know, always focusing on doing the right thing. And I think that stuck with me over the last, 20 years, where making decisions and having that as a framework that you make decisions through, where you do the right thing and it will come back to support you over time. That's definitely happened where, you know, even if you're having a bad day, doing the right thing and then seeing that come back to support you in the future is really positive. I think one of the things that got me into this, into the Space Cube social enterprise space, was really read a number of books. One was by Muhammad Yunus, which is around, he wrote a book called Banker to the Poor, which is about micro lending and micro banking in Bangladesh, and how that had empowered a whole generation of women to start their own businesses. Mm. And for me, that was really about, you know, that combination of social impact and commerce and enterprise and capitalism, that, you know, we can see capitalism go pretty bad in some ways, but this is a way that it's being used to do good. So that book I recommend to anyone, but that's sort of what opened my eyes to, hang on, we can probably do this in a different way. You know, through SpaceCube, we make money through people using our space, partnering on programs, and we can reinvest those funds back into supporting entrepreneurs, women learning to code, funding startups, which is really positive for our society.
Yeah. And going forward, this has been your baby now for several years, about a decade or so, or, you know, nudging up towards 10 years. What's the goal for the next 5, 10? Where would you like to take it?
Yeah, so really great opportunity through the Merrill campaign. Now everyone knows what I'm about, which is pretty good. And off the back of that, we've had a lot of opportunities come through the door for how we can grow our impact through other partnerships. Recently opened a space with Mirvac, and there's national opportunities around that. And growing our impact. So She Codes is now running in Queensland. So I think we're doing a lot of things really well. It's really about now how we just grow that impact and support that to continue growing. Mm. West Australia is in an amazing position right now where mining has got us through COVID. We've got people moving back to Perth. So there's a positive population growth, which WA really needs. And at the same time, we've got a lot of people who have left Australia, picked up a lot of skills globally and are moving back. So I think this combination of things means that we talk about diversification, we talk about the opportunity in Asia and how West Australia can tap into that. I think we're now going to get all the skill sets in place and all the pieces to actually act and take on those opportunities. So my hope is that SpaceCube would be a big partner and player in how we deliver on those things. And, you know, one of my opportunities is that we see some of the building names on St. George's Terrace getting, like, we'll have some tech startups that have grown and they've got their names on the building. Mm. I think over the next 10 years, we'll almost definitely see that happen based on the work from the last 10 years.
Yeah, well, we'll wait and see. Maybe some brand new buildings, not even just rebadging the ones that we've already got, but some brand new buildings. Brody, it's been fascinating hearing your story. Good luck for the future. And I'm sure next time I read the headline, you know, Perth being the new Silicon Valley, I'll think of you and hopefully we'll get there.
Great. Thanks so much, Tim.
It's been great. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Inspiring Stories here on 882 6PR. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. We look forward to you joining us again next time as we unearth another inspiring story.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.